Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, as it's been for the past 40 or so years. And I'm really curious about this conversation, where it will take us. And there's kind of one of those messages where I say, hey, you think interestingly, I think, can we talk? And we did, and I was right. I'm really, really warm welcome to the podcast, Jim Wallenberg.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. My first podcast ever.
Ooh. <That's exciting.
laughs> It's a premiere.
that's flattering.
Thanks. It was an interesting invite. I don't listen too much podcasts, and I have never been a part of a podcast. So this is very interesting. And as you said, it was a very interesting conversation we had.
Before. And at some other. And I think sort of in the general direction that I will steer us towards is actually, we're going to touch upon, I think, talk a lot about leadership and followership, and maybe more other terms like management and things like that, perhaps. Today, I have a feeling that might come up. But first, I'll ask you the hardest question that I have for you today.
All right.
Who are you, Jim Wallenberg?
I guess you could answer that question in a lot of different ways. I am born, raised on the countryside. I've been working in the saw and paper wood industry most part of my life. I've been working as an electrician, machine operator, but also as a project leader, maintenance manager, coach, and change management and advisor, and so on. How to define myself today is I would say that I'm a curious person. Before, I was mostly interested in the, as an electrician and in the industry, I was interested in the technology. But nowadays, I'm more interested in the organization and the culture and the people and the management, how we use the technology or how we interact with each other. So that is my curiosity. I would say that I want to learn and learn new things. And the more I learn, the, as you say, the less I think I understand. But I want to continue to develop in different areas. I have no idea if that was an answer to your question.
it is an answer.
It's an answer.
For sure. I think that's also why I felt such a strong connection to, as we were speaking in the first, as we were kind of meeting the first time on our sort of digital coffee, is that curiosity, and that I perceived you to be very open and agile and like willing to try on, if you will, like new ideas or new perspectives. And so that I find is very enlivening.
And I try to, because you have this, would you say the bias where you only seek things that you confirm what you already believe, confirmation bias. And I try very hard sometimes to avoid that bias. When I don't really agree with something, I think that I need to understand this better. As some old leader said, I don't like that man, so I need to learn, get to know him better. But it takes so much energy to live like that. A motto or something of mine that I think I need to do that. Not only be with people that I agree with, only read books that I already agree with, but to seek out different angles or perspectives that is hard for me to accept.
Why?
Because yeah, why? Well, it's a great question, of course. Because I don't want to be I don't want to get stuck in one place. I don't think that the world is so narrow that I want to see the full picture, and I somehow have the feeling that there's no universal truth, maybe gravity and such things, but otherwise it's just perspective, and I would like to have an understanding of different perspectives. I would like to contribute to a better society. I would like to contribute to more human businesses where we don't treat each other like machines, but as humans. And to be able to do that, I think I need to have a broad perspective of different areas, of different ideas, and so on.
Yeah, appreciate it. There was like a question that was left in me, and so this is a weird question. I don't think I've ever asked that before, but let's see if it lands. But I was wondering, like, do you feel like you have climbed this socioeconomic ladder? Like, do you feel like you have done a klassresa in Swedish?
Not really. In some sense, I have a better situation economically than my parents, but most people have, I think. I don't know if I've never been eager to climb the ladder, the corporate ladder, to become a more powerful person in that respect, but I'm always been curious to learn more, to be able to perform my duties in a better way, in a more effective way, qualitative way, and that curiosity have led me forward and also led me to be in a manager position. But I have never seeked out to become a manager or to climb the corporate ladder, but it has opened such opportunities. And that has not been obvious to accept those invitations to such positions, but because it's not something that I've really valued for the sake of the position or But could I do something good with this role, with this position? If yes, then okay. I have no idea if that was an answer to your question. Sorry.
I really appreciate the answer because it feels like, I mean, one thing is that it's a challenge. Like you've obviously worked your way through the organization in terms of like you've touched a number of different positions in the organization. So I'm consciously not giving that a direction because normally like we would say up, right? And up would in our culture mean good, right? Yeah. You know, better. And, I'm hearing you hold that lightly in terms of, so I really appreciate that. I mean, that's an unconventional perspective, but normally being a manager would increase your socioeconomic status. And so that's why I was asking, like, do you feel like you've been, and then I heard you during our pre-call, you said something that as you became a boss, a manager with people under you, there was this question that's like, how can we know that, how could they know, or how could I know that I'm suitable for this?
Exactly. They didn't know. And I asked them, why do you give me this role? You have no idea. I might do a terrible job as a manager. I have no track record. And they said, but you're so great guy and so on. And, oh, okay, thanks. But that doesn't say anything about me and my competence as a manager. So I asked them, can you give me some education in management or leadership coaching and so on? But no, you'll do fine. And that... Of course, for me personally, I wanted to do a great job as a manager to lead and develop my people. So I started reading a lot. It also got me to think about how we think about this position as this manager position. It's something that you kind of get, you're rewarded with if you do a good job. And I don't see it as that. but it's very common, of course. I had an interview for a position as maintenance manager many years ago, and the site manager asked something about if I have wanted to become a manager for a long time or something like that. And I said, no. I don't really I haven't been longing to become a manager or something like that. I just wanted to contribute to a well-functioning business, to a well-functioning department and so on. He grabbed me afterwards, after the interview, and said, "You can't say like that. You can't say that you doesn't want to become a manager, because that is you should strive for that to become a manager, to have that position. To say that you want to develop a good department and cooperation and collaboration and so on, that is you can't say it like that." Strange. You should say that you want to become a boss. And I thought he was kind of joking around, but he was dead serious. I didn't get that job, and I kind of was glad I didn't take it. So
So I'm hearing you speak to. What did you say? You said something like a well-functioning department or to contribute to. And so, I mean, now you're in a different position and you are also working with developing managers or exploring together with managers or teaching them. I don't know how you exactly phrase what you do right now, but
me neither. How to phrase what I do? Well, I have a position as a senior advisor at a company where I help businesses with health and security and electrical safety and work environment and so on. It's somewhat technical, but my focus is on the more culture and safety culture and so on. Then I also have my own business where I do lectures and offer, you know, to develop your organization with the leadership skills and so on. But it's a little bit on the side. Mm. I try to write some articles and so on about this to try to enlighten maybe, evoke thought and reflection about our approach to business, because that's a big thing for me. I think we need to update our approach to how we run our businesses, I would say.
Yeah, because I mean, that's also where the question of the kind of climbing came from, or like moving in this, like sort of for myself, because I'm curious about, we have a common denominator here that as I was working with, I always had like a managerial position, I guess, in the family company, but it's such a small company that I was doing a lot of different things. So I was working with the electricity of the machine that we were doing. And like when we were switching barrels around and like doing maintenance on screws and operating yep. mode and switching yep. oils. Yep. And like I was very much involved in that as well. So I have like a sense for the tangible, sort of the technical, the hands-on work. And I noticed that a lot of people that have not had that experience think differently about it. There's a lot of projections or like a lot of assumptions going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now you're yeah. also working, as you were saying, like with the safety, and there's one way to think about safety and control, but you bring in culture in that. So I don't have like a really clear question around it, but I'm curious about to kind of what do you say, like untangle some of those threads, or like what do you feel like you learned from the like what from the technical or like the less abstract do you bring with you into your into this work that you're doing now, into like your thoughts about leadership and so forth?
Well, it's I would say if it's you know, a work directly focused on safety, or if it's just to in more broader perspective to get your business to more of a well-functioning organization, it's you kind of end up with the same basic questions. How do we, what kind of approach do we have to our employees? Do we have a sort of, do we run a board game business, or do we have a more human business? Do we try to control with the, you know, the old tailor, in the more old tailor sense, we move around our employees as pawns on the board game. So I think we need to update our approach. And I see a lot of managers, they have a lot of issues with safety, health and safety, a lot of accidents and incidents and so on. And There's a lot of frustration, of course. So what do they do? They do what they right there and then know how to do. So they put up the carrot and stick and start using them. But to take the actual conversation with the person and have a discussion about the actual behavior is difficult for a lot of managers. To have that face-to-face conversation with the actual person and ask them how why do they do as they do and what do you need to do your work in a better way or to act more safely in the workplace mm-hmm. and so on. It's hard for a lot of managers to take that actual close, transparent, face-to-face conversation. It's easier to just communicate via a policy or email and to have strict rules about behaviors and communicate out through different media or so. And I think we need to understand that no matter what kind of business, no matter what kind of leadership tools we have in our toolbox, we need to realize that it's people that we lead, not projects, not companies, not processes. It's people. In that leadership, we need to have more understanding and competence in human behavior and communication that I think we realize.
I think it's so. So I want to like just peg it onto that, the fact that you're working with safety nonetheless. So that's because sometimes when we are working with sort of the management stuff, there's this excuse or so forth that we say it becomes like a nice to have almost, like it's cozy or like it's you know, but then safety is like central to the whole thing. That's like a super hardcore core value that has to be there, otherwise your business might get shut down by the, like if Arbetsmiljöverket yes. comes in, they will shut
yeah.
you down.
Yeah.
But you're still talking about the soft stuff, like the human stuff. And so,
yeah,
and this is a leading question, but like, lead it, like, how does it go together? Or like, why isn't the email or the policy enough? Or like, what are the tensions?
I don't know if I can answer, but the approach with communicating via email or just write a policy or have a big meeting and informing is that we think that our employees are kind of robots, that we could change their behavior through just one-way communication, through instructions. We could change the behavior of a robot or a machine through a different setup of instructions. But we as human beings are not machines or robots that you could change the behavior through just some communication or instructions. We are more complex than that. Mm-hmm. And we need to understand that. Leaders need to understand that we have our cognition, emotion, needs, fears, and all these cognitive biases. And to lead people to change behavior and so on, we need to have the knowledge and understanding of that. It doesn't matter if we think that they should understand and they should read the email and act accordingly. We don't work like that. Mm. We are more complex, and we need to realize that.
And now, because what I get curious about is like, so when we get the squishy stuff, like the human stuff, right, what happens? What typically happens then? Like when you work with a company and they're responsive to this approach that you're suggesting in terms of like really taking a culture of health and safety seriously, like what happens then? What becomes possible?
Well, we also in this need to realize that this is it's not a quick fix. We need to have a more long-term perspective. And that is a big thing for a lot of companies, because we have issues now and we need to deal with them now. And we need to see this change now. And we could, you know, write down some new rules and set up some new signs and give out helmets and stuff. But and we should do that, of course, because we need the structure. I'm not saying that we don't need the structure. Of course, we need a good functioning structure, but we also need to start. Working with the culture, with the behavior, with the attitudes, with the values, and that is to learn more of a long term work. But then, as a side effect, I would say that you might also get a higher engagement. You should be prepared. and that is, of course, a positive thing. But
because my mind skips to, as you were speaking before, in terms of like instructions and knowledge, and just mindlessly doing what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, to me, I think it's I skip to this whole debate that's going on at the moment around AI. Like this idea that we have in companies that we seem to be acting from, which is like that humans are just bad computers, you know, in a way. Like, and so now that we have AI, we have good computers, and so they will be able to solve any issue, and they will be able to solve probably any issue better than that has to do with computation, better than any human. But what I think is interesting, or at least like my bias, I'm just weaving in sort of the experience and the feeling that I have around these things now. It's like when we get more people looking at a problem, different questions tend to appear, and questions that I didn't imagine that I could ask even appears. Mm. So it's like when I was thinking about our extrusion process from my office versus when I was there and running it, most of the things that I thought out would help was just obstacles, and it made it more difficult and trickier and harder. And like it wasn't, but versus like dealing with the felt sense of it, like moving through it, like this whole, I know you've looked at that too, but like this whole idea of our sort of cognition, not just being what we can think, but it's a full system of cognition. So I think, you know, I like what you're saying, that you might unleash engagement, but that's an engagement. What is that? Like, that's wanting to look at a problem and feeling that you will also contribute to it. Or like, I mean, it's like a path towards asking better questions. Like that's, you know, once you've taken away the obvious stuff, then yeah, I'll stop there.
I think a lot of companies, organizations have a lot of focus on getting to compliance, to get all these rules and regulations in order, because it's a must. You need to have all these in place. You need to have compliance. But it's also like that in lack of the ability to get to engagement, we settle with compliance. And that is unfortunate, I would say, because we don't use or we don't get to should use the potential in the individual or in the teams or in the organization if we only settle with compliance. So that is a big thing. And even if it's health and safety or if it's a well-functioning organization, it doesn't matter. We need to try to take the next step. Of course, we need to have all these rules and regulations in place. We need to have the compliance, but we should strive to get not only to okay, but to get to engagement, and not only to reduce our faults to okay, to reset the machine to default, to get to the doctor and heal ourselves to get to the okay level, but also to get to the engagement, to use our the potential to develop. So I think when it comes to health and safety, and even if it's electrical safety or whatever, it's the same thing. What do you mean by engagement? But if we only have compliance, we only have rules, and we often fall into the trap where we consider our employees to be robust, with that we could control through information. And that is not how we work, how we function, I would say.
There's so many ways to mishear what I'm about to say now, but let's see if yeah. We can. But it almost feels like, in terms of compliance, I mean, there are a lot of rules that are there, and many of them are there for a good reason. But it's, in some way, I feel like because we believe that there. World is controllable, that you can control the world with rules.
Yeah.
And because we believe something around, we have this project, I think, in our society around finding, you know, I mean, universal truth is like the universal, we need kind of one rule to suit them all. Like that's we just solve everything with one rule. And so that's a part of why. Because that's what we were feeling as a really small company. Like some of the rules weren't really relevant, and of course, like if we were running a 24/7 operation with five shifts or seven, like a bunch of shifts, and it was just going and running and so forth, then there would have been a lot of other things that would have had to be in place for what we were doing. But because we were doing a production now and then, and it was just a few hours, and then like so, we settled for doing certain things manually that are like on the edge, let's say, of what sort of compliance rules would allow. But there's something around that sort of lack of contextuality. Like we don't deal with the context. We don't deal with the adaptations to the local stuff. And so I'm wondering if there's like the reason for why we settle for compliance is because compliance at the moment is pretty heavy. It's a pretty heavy burden to reach just to compliance, and you're doing a lot of things that doesn't really matter to your business specifically, but you're doing things that has proven to be good for businesses in general. But it's just that we aren't. It's not in general. It's a specific. Like we're in a. So I don't know how we. I'm not saying don't have any rules, but I'm saying. Something.
I totally agree. It's not an easy quick fix to get to compliance. It's a heavy thing. It's a lot of rules, and we get stuck there, I would say. And even if we get there, we only have reached the okay level, so to say, and we need our workplaces, our to be more, as you say, flexible, adaptable. Then we need to have reached the next level, because if we have the compliance, we're not so keen to change, because then we need to adapt all these compliances. I guess so. it's difficult, of course. I would say not a quick fix, but we shouldn't give up. And I feel almost, I would say that some are giving up. And I've spoken to managers that about this, you know, engagement and this potential. Well, of course, that would be nice, but how do we do that? I mean, as if it was, just luck that you couldn't work or develop engagement or well-functioning collaborations and teamwork and so on.
Mm.
So if it's a lack of knowledge or just lack of hope, I don't really know, but it's frustrating to hear that attitude might be out there in managers. They don't really have if they don't have the faith in their people to get there, or if it's lacking their own skills to lead them there, I don't know.
Let's get into some of the stuff that you're doing, because I'm hearing this story, I think, which is sort of the most dangerous story there is, that like that's just how the world is, or that's not how my people are, or like it's like this story of
absolutes,
that things are absolutes or like determined. But so how do we, what are the, if you're really dealing with a manager that is stuck in the, well, that's not how the world works, or that's not how it is, or that's not possible. I mean, that's faithless, like that they don't have, they're hopeless and they're faithless. How do you begin? Yeah. How do you find a way?
I don't know, really. It depends, I guess, but I would be somewhat interested in how they came to that conclusion.
Hmm.
How did you come to that conclusion that it's like what you say? What have you tested? What have you tried? What led you to this belief? And ask them to elaborate on that, and to be curious, and not to oppose that. Because he has that view, and I think I should be interested in how it came to be. And I'm not sure that confronting with a different view is the best way. But to be curious and elaborate, and then it might be that the person feels that it's... maybe not so well grounded point of view. So my approach, I try to have the approach of the more curious person, as Adam Grant's scientist in his book Think Again. We have this different styles of, the preacher, the prosecutor, the politician, and the scientist. And I often try to take the scientist view to question not only others, but mostly maybe myself and my own views. How did I end up with this view? Or I think that is an important angle.
Mm. Yeah, and I just wanted to make explicit that I heard a voice in me saying, "But that's not going to work for everyone." And then I heard myself also saying, "No," and that's kind of the point. That's what we're saying. Like this is contextual. And like that's it. Isn't there isn't one way of doing this, but it is. A way of doing this, and it's like it becomes the Gandhi thing. It's like be you know, be the change. Like, and so you're proposing to be the scientist, to be curious and to have that opening and kind of no matter what. And so then certain people are going to be pulled to that and others are not. And that's okay. And those are not, that are not, should probably not be working with you or with me. I mean, I'm saying that as a general statement, rather. It's, yeah. And then I hear you speak of something, which is like, it's so interesting how, because I have an esoteric lean, so I spend some time with mysticism and sort of more sort of concepts like that. And then you said something around you get curious, not so much about, you're not trying to question the other, but you're rather trying to question yourself through the other. Like there's something around sort of that other self relationship that showed up as you were describing that. I'm wondering how you think about that.
Because I could have a discussion with another person about we have different ideas, conflicting views, and I could confront him or her with my view, but then it all mostly just end up, you know, arguing for my point of view, and that is not so interesting. More interesting is to be curious and how did you come to this point of view? What have you experienced and so on? And I would say it's not that uncommon that I'm the one changing my view. Because it might be my view that is ungrounded and so on. I think I need to be humble that even though I think I have well-grounded views and values and opinions and so on, I need to be able to update my views. What did he say? I think it was Alain de Botton that said, if you're not ashamed of who you were last year, you're probably not learning enough. no, okay. Maybe I shouldn't be ashamed, but a little embarrassed maybe. I, that's kind of true when I read old articles that I've written. I wouldn't phrase it like that. I wouldn't say it like that today. Or I'm maybe not even agreeing with myself. I have an updated view.
I'm still stuck on the like. Do you have, as a curious, do you have favorite questions to ask? Or questions that live right now. That's not like, let's lower the bar. Like, what are the questions that you bring with you right now into?
I think regardless of the issue or the subject, I'm kind of curious of how it connects to the system around. If you have a point of view, or if you have a truth or something, how does that correlate, or how does that connect to the system, to the environment? It's nice to discuss the issue itself, of course, but if I can't get the bigger picture, if I can't, you know, correlate or connect it with the system, it's not that interesting, I would say, for me. So one main question for me is how does it fit? Fit would be the wrong word, I guess. How does it connect? How does it correlate, relate, or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Relate. Exactly. That's the better word.
I like that. I just want to, because I really like that question, because it also reveals something about ourselves, I think, or it has a potential to. So like, if you would ask me that about an opinion that I have, then you would probably be able to tell if I was a person that thinks that, like we were speaking about, that this is just the way that the world is, and I'm just kind of following along with something, or if I'm feeling like I'm in opposition to something, like, no, like I'm anti, like I don't want this thing to happen, so therefore I hold this view, or like, why do you think, well, because nobody else thinks that, like I'm so special that, I mean, there are all, like there's so much information in that relationship between ourselves and what we perceive to be the way that things have to be, or like the, I mean, that to me is the culture in a way, like that's the,
yeah,
that's the water that we swim in, that type of culture that we're like the stuff that we don't see or we don't take as possible. Like those are not things that you get to question, or I have to relate to these things. It's like, and it invites me to maybe think even, I when I feel into the question, it invites me to think about the deeper question around sort of, do I really have to have an opinion about this? Or do I really have to, is that the right pushing off point? Or like, is that what I want to relate to or be in, I don't know.
What do you think about, and to say that, well, I don't know really. That is not always so easy to say. I don't know. I see different views here, and I haven't made up my mind, or I'm not sure I ever will. But a lot of people have. It's very easy for them to have an opinion, but if you ask them how that relates or what the effect of that would be, it's hard for them to elaborate. And I think it's, as you said, it's because either that they have an opinion that is their, it's the opinion of the network that they're in, or the group that they belong to, or they just want to have an conflicting point of view to be special. I don't know. But I'm asking the question because I'm interested
not to reveal or to like pull down the pants of, like, it's not to put someone in their spot. Right, it's to actually inquire, and you're curious. It comes from a genuine exploration. It's not about getting them, or like, haha, you know. It's not like a
exactly because it could be, even though I think that they are way off, that it's me and my views that might need a little update here, they could give me insight. Even do I still think that they are way off, it gives me input and insight in a broader perspective.
A way to what I'm hearing you speak to, and like this is my sort of object if I'm not hearing you right, but I'm hearing you speak to this sort of, again, sort of the contextuality of our identities. So what I mean by that is that at work, we are a person, and that person is that person because of, it's your professional self, your professional role. I mean, we even say that, right? And so it might be that you early in your career saw something happen or go wrong, or you were treated in a way or like whatever at work. And then once you shift out of that context and you go home and you're with your kids or your family and so forth, you might be a completely different person. Like, what do I know? But a lot of us are. I know that I am, certainly. And so there is something around sort of what I'm hearing you speak to in terms of that relationship, because it reveals the context in which the identity or the opinion has been formed. And it doesn't mean that the person is like this. It's just that it appears in this context for that person, they have developed that opinion. And so there's something really cool going on there, because it's revealing all these different threads in terms of. And I'm thinking about, there's this woman called Nora Bateson who's in Sweden, and she's working with something called Warm Data Labs. And that's roughly what she does. She will take one problem, and then you put people in a room together, and there are different places in this room, physical places, tables and so forth. And then you move to look at the same problem or same question or same issue, same conundrum, like predicament, but from different lenses. So like one lens would be your professional self. The other one would be from the legal system. The third one would be from the health system. The fourth one would be from the school system. And so you get to shift these perceptions and try on different clothes, if you will, and see how your identity, because that's what happens. Like you feel your identity shift and you're like, you become someone else and in a different context. You think different thoughts and hold different values. Like when you are a parent or when you are on the school board, looking at the same thing, those are very different points of view. So yeah, I get excited about that question. That's a
I don't know if you could say it like that, but the downside of always have this broad perspective is that nothing gets done. Because you can look at it like this, and you could look at it like this, and the third perspective, and the fourth, and the fifth, and and I kind of get dizzy of all these perspectives. So that is an issue for me. Sometimes it's too much perspective. I need to narrow it down, to simplify it, to be able to act. But I guess that is just something that I need to deal with, to be able to go in and out of this perspective taking.
I'm curious now, because you said before, when we were talking about compliance, I heard you say something like, you give them the helmets and the glasses and the gloves and that stuff, and then you're compliant, and then you settle, you stop. It's like that. It has something to do with sort of this perspective that culture changes slowly, and it's like a long-term process and something like that. But I'm wondering, like, I see a difference between when the change happens and when we can see the change.
Oh,
so I'm wondering, like, how do you think about that? Like, when is change? Like, when does it happen?
Oh, I haven't thought about it like that. When is the change and when? Okay. I guess the change is much sooner than we realize. Of course, there could be a big change from one moment to the next, because big events or so on. But this more common gradual change is constant, I guess. But do we use that constant change to our advantage, to get it to the place that we want, or do we just follow the change and end up wherever? So that is the change, I guess, in some sense is constant. But if we want to, I don't want to use the word control, but I guess if we want to affect
direct, even
drive the change towards the goal that or the end that we want, it's a different thing.
I like, because that's also, I mean, that's what kind of what I'm hearing you say before as well, or like how I interpret, because if there isn't an opportunity to change in the particular way that you coming into the meeting or into the context thought that you were going to change, if by asking these questions, you might be able to kind of see where there is possibility to change, and can you kind of...
Oh.
jump on board or like hook on to that change that's already happening and then gently guide or direct it, like invite a direction to that, for instance.
Okay.
Because there's this perspective that I can really relate with, that it's not, I really believe that it's not possible to change anyone else. I don't think I can do that. But I can change the relationship between us. I can change how we interact, and then something will happen. Words are tricky here, but something like that.
Yeah, because I agree. I don't think I could change another person, but I could present facts. I could present point of views. I could present different things, maybe, and evoke ideas or emotions and so on. And through that, the person might change so I can't change another person, but of course I think that I could affect.
It's like I'm hearing you speak to, like, almost like you're, but because that's my bias, I think here, of course, you could change another person. Like, we can use violence. I mean, we can push people. We can force them.
Yeah.
You know, from a position of power, we can force people. But to me, that's the difference between, then we're back in the control versus the engagement thing. And what I'm hearing you speak to now, and like, you offer the facts and the point of views and the ideas and the emotions and the different feel, like, it, that's like opening doors. It's like widening the space. It's like moving the walls out, so you have more space to move on, and just making visible that you can move here now if you want to. And then eventually the person will begin to move themselves. But you, in order to do that, you have to trust that everybody wants to move. Like,
exactly. And have the respect that they might be well off where they are. Because one main thing, one to say main goal for me is to get people to reflect, to question their own views. That, and I'm not saying how they should view things, but I would like to get them to reflect more and so on. So that is and that is one way to change people. Mm-hmm. I guess it might be that they change in another direction that I would have seen, but to be to ask a question to get them to reflect.
That's interesting, because it's an invitation to do something, and then as you're reflecting, you're actually taking it into yourself.
Yeah. You know,
it's like I heard someone speak to smell as a to invoke, to ask people how something smells is interesting, because it's, when we smell, we take it into ourselves to be able to make, like, to actually feel it. And so it's like a different path. And so it becomes much more intimate and closer. I mean, we were saying that as well. Like, if you would hug someone for the first time and smell them, that's really intimate. Like, that's culturally, yeah. Like, yeah. I get like, ooh, ah, creepy person, creepy dude. You know?
And this reflection, I think, it's important, because I could instruct people on how to behave. Let's get back to the safety. Mm-hmm. I, as a manager, instruct the people how they should behave, what they can do and can't do, and so on. But if I can't get them to reflect on the importance and why we should do this, I will need to be out there and constantly control them on these rules. But if I can get them to reflect on the importance of these behaviors on this safety, it might be a different thing.
Because again, I mean, usually it depends. Like most of the time, I mean, some things are probably, like in a given context, probably absolutely forbidden. Like you should never put a metal thing into a...
No, exactly. There are.
But then on the other hand, like if you're not an electrician, then metal things are fine. So, you know.
Yeah. No, exactly. But yeah. I got the picture. I watched TV the other day, and I saw a cowboy, and I thought about this is the leadership we have today. We have this cowboy style leadership where we're herding our cattle, and this is example. We need to get away from the cowboy style leadership and get to the more human leadership where we interact and have a conversation with our employees. You don't have conversation with your cattle. You just whip and then you don't just tell your cattle instructions on where they are supposed to go. You have an interaction and conversation and get them to reflect on the issue at hand, on the bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, I asked you if you felt like you had climbed a ladder at some point, right? And you said, no, not really. You know, I just kind of did what needed to be done. I'm paraphrasing, of course, and I'm not doing it justice. But it's, I think it's interesting to see what happens when what becomes possible when we put ourselves at eye level. Because I hear you speak with deep respect about all of these professions and views and people, that all of it has validity and legitimacy, and there's nothing that there's there to be disregarded. And it doesn't, just because you're saying that, just because one says that I want to understand where you're coming from, I want to understand why you hold this opinion, it doesn't mean that you agree or that it has to be the way that the person says that or sees that it is. There is potential for change in that understanding, in that opening. I keep hearing these stories about people that have never been asked why they hold an opinion. And never had to look at why they hold an opinion. And then sometimes they just say, oh, my parents told me that this is what it was. Or there's some other reason, like my cultural context or whatever it might be. And there's like great liberty for them to discover that, like, oh my God, this is not my opinion at all. This is just someone else's opinion that I'm reenacting for no reason other than I hadn't asked the question. Like, I really appreciate this meandering inquiry. Is there something else that we should have talked about or that feels alive to you right now that you would like to presence?
No, I just have the my mind wanders sometimes, and you said before we have all these rules, where I talked about the rules and we talked about compliance, and we have all these rules to rule them all. And I heard this the Lord of the Ring quote, one ring to rule them all. And it's you know, as you said, we have this view that there is a universal truth that we are seeking to get this. And it's almost like the Lord of the Rings. We seek this ring to be able to have the power to rule them in an effective way. And I guess we need to abandon that. There is no ring that holds the power to rule them.
Or you give the ring to a hobbit that has this strange resilience and that just is able to, you know, I mean, it's like...
Oh, sweet.
It's very apt. And so if people want to find out more about you or work with you, and I guess most of your writing is in Swedish, I'm assuming.
Yes, It's in Swedish.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Yeah. But anyways, like, where would people where would people find you?
Well, I guess the easiest way is through LinkedIn.
Cool. I'll put a link to your LinkedIn, if that's okay, in the show notes.
Yeah, sure. Would be great to connect with people who have a different point of view, or the same as well. But I came across a book a few months ago. It's a typical example. The title was Against Empathy. And I thought how can you title a book against empathy? Empathy is so important. I just got frustrated over it. But I need to read this book because I need to understand the point of view to be able to have that title. And I got a much broader perspective on this empathy thing. So very interesting. And that's kind of how I would like to continue, be able to, this is not how I think, but I want to understand. How do you think? It's interesting.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time and for playing with me in this odd, strange little context that's also here. I really appreciate the conversation and the inquiry and the curiosity.
Yeah, thanks.